Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there, Science Rules listener. The episode you're about to hear features Gillian Jacobs and Diana Reasonover, who host one of Stitcher's other great shows. At the time, that show was called If Then. Recently, they changed their name to Periodic Talks. If you don't already subscribe, go look for it in your favorite podcast app after you're done listening to this episode, of course. That's Periodic Talks. Turn it up loud. This on? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science!
Exactly. Evolution does some pretty funky things.
That is a false fact.
The old question in science is, how do you know that?
Achievement equals skill times effort.
That's the recipe for success.
I'm about to show you something so cool it'll blow your mind.
We can make the world better for everybody.
Starting now.
Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye. This is the show where science rules. Now, it's a call-in show, and if you want to be on the show, and I hope you do, leave us a voicemail at 201-472-0785 or go to askbillnye.com. You can check me out on all the social media that the kids use to find out about our upcoming guests. I'm joined once again, yes, my friends, by science writer, editor, and dear friend, Corey S. Powell. Hello, Corey.
Oh, hello, Bill. What a fine day for a podcast with new science leadership in this country taking the reins. Things feel good. But, you know, one happy revelation for me over the past 4 years has been discovering how many people from all kinds of other professions have a passion for science and who've really stepped up to help share the wonder of curiosity and discovery. And we have two of them on the show today, including an actor who I've long admired, who is a fellow Pittsburgher, no less.
A fellow Pittsburgher, yes, my friends. We have Gillian Jacobs and Diana Reasonover. They are both actors. You probably know Gillian from the sitcom Community and Diana from NCIS. And they are hosts of their own new podcast called If Then. Gillian Jacobs and Diana Reasonover, welcome to Science Rules. May I call you Gillian and may I call you Diana?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Greetings. Right. Greetings.
Greetings.
You guys like science out in your life. And your podcast is If Then, which is a classic quote erat demonstrandum sort of situation in science.
Bill, some people just say QED.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, some people do. Yeah, some people definitely do.
Gillian, you directed a documentary about Grace Hopper.
Oh, yeah. So I directed a short documentary years ago about Grace Hopper, which was really the beginning of my interest in STEM, STEAM. And as you both know, but listeners might not, she was an important person in the early history of computing, starting with her work on the Mark I computer at Harvard during World War II, and then her work on early computing languages and really helping to establish what became the computing industry after the war.
She came up with COBOL, right? The language.
No, that is very contested.
I never heard that. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
So she did some work, important work on compilers, and her work is part of the basis for what became the computing language COBOL. But she was not actually on the committee that created COBOL. And I know that because I interviewed another woman named Jean Samet, who actually was on the COBOL committee. And when she heard about my documentary, she made sure that I knew that Grace Hopper did not invent COBOL. But But
don't make her come over there. Yes. So tell everybody the name of the documentary.
Oh, it's called The Queen of Code. And it really sparked this whole interest I have in STEAM.
One of the fun tidbits that I know about Grace Hopper is that she's credited with at least popularizing the term computer bug with a literal bug that she found in her computer.
That was, yes, during World War II, they found, I think, a moth in the computer. And that was where the term bug came from in computing.
That's why we have the old expression, it's not a moth, it's a feature. wait. Deanna, you play a forensic scientist on NCIS.
Yes, I get paid to do pretend science.
How much science do you pick up playing that role?
Almost none. Hold on. Here's what's going on. So when I am on the show, it's unbelievably fascinating, and I have very little idea of what I'm saying, because when you learn science, when you think about it, you learn the basics, and then you sort of scaffold your learning, right? And then if you work really hard, you get the privilege of doing a job where you get to apply the highest amount of science that you've learned. I'm sort of doing this backwards, which is I am coming in and pretending to be someone who has done all this work and all this study, and having to say these lines as if I know what they are. It's extremely fascinating to me, but it's kind of like looking at the Twitter algorithm, you know, looking at the back end and then being like, oh, this is how I'm learning computer programming. It's just wild. It's backwards.
But you enjoy it.
Yes, I'm very interested in it. So what it's done is it's made me very interested, very curious, very much wanting to know more about actual science, so that one day maybe I can look back on old episodes and be like, ah, yes, I finally get that scene.
Well, here you go. That's exactly what I wanted to know, is what brought the two of you together now doing this kind of podcast science exploration?
You know, as I mentioned, after doing the documentary about Grace Hopper, I've gotten to speak with people like Jean Samet, Megan Smith, all sorts of people in the world of STEAM, and I keep wanting to speak to more and more of them. And the more people I speak to, the more my curiosity grows. And so thankfully, Deanna has joined me in this journey where we're getting to now talk to all of these really incredible, brilliant people about their fields. And it's very wide ranging and open ended, which is really fun. So, you know, anything that falls within the STEAM world, we'll be able to talk about.
Yeah. And TV moves, you guys know, lightning fast. I mean, much too fast to actually be able to catch up on all this science in real time as scripts are coming out. So this podcast is kind of like my crash course in a lot of the science that I have missed.
What's an example, a most recent example of something you went, wow, what was that all about that I just said?
Mine would be hyperbolic geometry.
You know what that is now.
In what setting were you talking about hyperbolic geometry? I have to know.
Yes. So I was speaking to Margaret Wertheim, who with her twin sister has this project called the Hyperbolic Crocheted Coral Reef, in which they crochet coral reef figures. And it's a project that talks about the intersection of hyperbolic geometry imaged through crochet, as well as addressing the climate crisis, how it's affecting the Great Barrier Reef, and sort of bringing all of those things together with the people who are interested in crocheting as well. So Margaret was talking about how this connection was made between hyperbolic geometry and crochet. And so I really had to try and wrap my head around.
What's the difference? Hang on. What's the difference between geometry and hyperbolic geometry and hyperbola?
And what's the difference between that and crocheting? Because in my mind, they're all really the same thing.
Okay. This is what I do remember. So they were having really a hard time imaging hyperbolic geometry, which she gives the example of the way the curly head of a lettuce, how the end of it, if you think of the end of a lettuce leaf, it's, you know, a curly figure. And so they're having trouble imaging it even on computer programming. And this woman who is a STEAM person, a scientist, but also has an interest in crocheting, realized that probably the best way to image it was through crochet. And so it became that there was this connection formed between hyperbolic geometry and crocheting. And because Margaret's twin sister is an artist and she is a science writer, they realized that they had this opportunity to bring that to a larger, wider audience by making the crocheting not of hyperbolic geometric forms, but of crochet of coral reef figures, and that this would attract a wider audience and also bring this notion of the intersection of hyperbolic geometry and crocheting maybe to more people who are interested in crocheting who might not be aware of it.
Right. In hyperbolic geometry, it just basically means that a lot of the geometric rules that we learned, like in school, you know, like 2 pi r and like how to calculate the angles of a triangle, those apply a lot of the times to a flat surface, but not to these highly curved 3D surfaces. So they're just different rules, you know, like 180, a circle might not add up to 360, you know, degrees. It might just
so
be different.
The included angle. So here's what I think.
Yeah.
In regular Euclidean, named after Steve Wilson. No, it's named after a guy named Euclid. There's two rules. Parallel lines never touch. And if you have an X shape, the angle at the top and the angle at the bottom are equal. The angle on the right and the angle on the left are equal. But in hyperbolic geometry, I think they're not straight lines, they're hyperbole. And so you do all the same stuff mathematically, but the actual shape of things are literally hard to imagine where they exist outside of our everyday experience. But mathematically, like if you have some computer program where things are going to intersect or figures are going to be created, you can just add dimensions. And just, you know, party on, man. It's cool.
No, it's cool because if our listeners just Google hyperbolic crochet, it makes a lot more sense when you see it. These sort of hyperbolic shapes, they kind of look
saddle,
like
a saddle on a horse. It's a
saddle shape. Yeah. You know, it looks mathematical, but you also immediately recognize it as the shape of kind of like the surfaces of those brain corals. It's, you know, it looks very oceanic as well as mathematical. So this connection that's at first blush seems kind of insane. Makes a lot of sense when you see it.
Well, you all explained it very well.
Well, it seemed, you know what, I know why, but when Margaret explained it, the idea that the way people learn math, the way people learned about, you know, science was not necessarily through a classroom when people are making these initial scientific discoveries. It's that you were kind of doing and learning as you went, and that this is kind of an example of that. It's applying something in the real world to like a higher education level of mathematics.
For our show, I'm learning alongside the audience about these new concepts, new areas of study. And so it's been really fun to push myself to have to explain hyperbolic geometry. My palms are sweating as I'm doing this.
Oh, you should see the sweat pouring just out of my armpits. It's ridiculous.
I'm good. It's a family show.
This is why it's a podcast.
This was not really the conic section show. But it's interesting that this person that, Gillian, that you became so interested in started with geometry, ignoring the idea that parallel lines never touch.
Correct.
Like, that's just so, I mean, you've seen train tracks. We all kind of know what a parallel line is. But imagine having geometry without that rule. It's like, dude, it's like so out there. Like,
well, I appreciate just like this spirit of curiosity that the two of you have been describing.
Yes.
And is this like channeling your childhood? Is it like trying to tunnel back to the kind of curiosity that you had as kids? Were you science curious kids and you're trying to get back there?
I think so. I mean, I think that's something that keeps coming up as we do recordings for this podcast, is stories about ourselves as children, various tangents of interest that we had that we may have dropped. We, you know, neither one of us went on to major in a STEAM field, well, arts, but STEM in college. But yeah, it's sort of also when you're a kid, you just ask questions about the world and why things are the way they are. And so I guess I'm trying to get back to that as well.
Yeah. And I have almost an opposite story in that when I was in ninth grade, my school didn't have enough chairs in the ninth grade introduction to science class. So they put 6 of us randomly in advanced placement biology. First day of high school. Yeah, it was wild. And I never caught up. Like, I was just behind.
How could you? Yeah. Oh, here's an enzyme. What?
Yeah. Welcome to the Krebs cycle.
Exactly. And I never caught up. And it just, it made me feel like I would just never be good at science. And so I didn't ask questions because I was scared to, because everybody was so ahead of me. So now that's why I'm like, I just got to be honest. I don't know what this is. And I just ask questions now. And this show has allowed me to do that and to have a freedom that I didn't really have growing up.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Science Rules is back.
So we are on the Science Rules podcast hosted by Bill Nye and Corey S. Powell. But you guys, Deanna Reasonover and Gillian Jacobs, are going to ask us questions.
Takeover. Yes. Now we're going to now bring you on to If Then.
Okay. Yes. And if we don't know the answer, I promise I will say I don't know.
Yay.
Yay. The only rule.
So, Bill, you just got revealed on The Masked Dancer as the Ice Cube. How do we know that it wasn't Corey under the mask?
Well, I don't know how you know, except I the Ice Cube was as tall as I am.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so I'll give you, you know, if as tall as Bill, then probably not Corey.
I think good answer.
It's hard to tell on the podcast, but there's a rather significant difference in the two of us in terms of stature.
In those terms. In terms of is a mathematical thing.
The subject of height or altitude above the floor, there is a significant discrepancy.
But the expression in terms of comes from mathematics. You express y in terms of x, for example.
Didn't remember that.
Okay. Now, we do actually have a real question. We're curious about what you have learned that really engages kids.
Space and dinosaurs, everybody. Space and dinosaurs, not my idea, but it is, as I like to joke, a true fact. People of all ages are engaged by outer space and dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are monsters that were real. They have a whole – what's another thing, Deanna? What's everybody into? Forensics.
Oh, 100%. Well, catch the criminals. Like,
yeah, right. What happened at this crime scene? Well, when you find ancient fossil bones, this creature must have existed. Like, dude, that is so out there. Dude, vicious teeth. And so they're monsters that are under control. They're not coming after you because they're not around anymore. And then in space exploration, flying in space, who wants to be an astronaut? Everybody – it gets at these two deep, deep questions. Where did we all come from? Where did we all come from? And then are we alone? Are there aliens, beings out there on some other planet orbiting some other star? And do they wonder if we are over here? These questions are so deep within us.
Well, between the two of us, we covered that because Deanna went to space camp as a child, and I had a deep interest in dinosaurs. So I think
you're like regular people.
Yeah, those are the classics. I'm on Twitter a lot. That's sort of one of my outlets for trying to spread the joy of science, or
especially
whatever you want to call
cosmology.
Kind of astronomy, space, cosmology. And one of the happiest things that happened to me yesterday is a woman who I know only kind of tangentially. Was a science reporter.
That's a mathematical thing. A tangent.
Oh, yes. There we go.
I remembered that one.
It's happening all by itself. She tweeted at me last night. She said, "You haven't sent out your kind of like cool space fact of the day, and I always read your space facts to my kids at bedtime. So give me something to work with right now."
Help a lady out. Oh, is what
she's saying. I was like, you know, you communicate out to the world. You don't really know where it goes. But the fact that somebody was kind of tucking in their kids with some cool bit of space discovery that I would send out each day, it made me very happy, you know, that just to know it at that personal level.
That's awesome.
At the Planetary Society, we have our weekly wow. We have our wow. And space is full of wows. My goodness. Well, science is full of wows. That's what makes us all go. And, you know, it's easy to claim that our ancestors who were not fascinated by the world around them never got to be our ancestors. They died off or got killed or whatever the heck happened by the ancestors who were curious about the world around them.
Mm. Well, that's something that we like to ask people, too. What are things that inspire awe and wonder in you?
Well, just even saying the word star, okay, you're telling me that you got so much gravity, you have so much stuff that you crush together so hard that you fuse and glow white hot for billions of years, then yellow hot, then red hot, for billions of years. And wait, there's more. Once in a while, the smushing of gravity is overcome by the energy being produced by the smushing, that the thing explodes. And when it explodes, the atoms are smashed together with such smashtivity that they combine to form all the elements that we know. And then you and I are made of these elements from exploded stars. And we can understand that.
Yeah.
That flips me out, that we are made of stardust, and then we have somehow, through the last, pick a number, 100,000 years, gotten away from just trying to control fires to actually understanding where fires come from, and then understand that we are made of fire stuff. Like, whoa!
Do you remember any particular moment of that realization?
It was when I was in college. A couple things happened. I had an outstanding physics teacher in high school. I will give us that. And he encouraged me to take the physics AP exam, this advanced placement, when it was like this new thing. Ooh, ooh. And so through a mistake, what must have been a mistake in the Cornell admissions department, I went to Cornell University, and this guy shows up I had never heard of, Hans Bethe. And Hans Bethe, unlike many of us, had a Nobel Prize for discovering this process by which carbon becomes nitrogen, becomes oxygen, and the star explodes.
He figures out how stars shine.
Mm. Yeah. And he goes on about this, and he shows us this graph that he generated, or he and his co-authors generated, showing you could he could predict the composition of the Earth's crust just sitting at his desk. And that... like, wow. And that's when, you know, I was quite old, or I wasn't in elementary school when this realization was presented to me. But now, kids in elementary school are shown this hypothesis and the evidence for this. And it's really, it's got to be so inspiring to people who are, you know, 10 years old and stuff. It's just cool.
I'll tell you something. In some ways, it's a much smaller and simpler kind of thing. It's an experiment that I saw demonstrated when I was a kid, where you take a bowl of water and you sprinkle pepper on it, and then you take a bar of soap.
Oh, man.
Put it in one side.
Classic.
And all the pepper flies to the other side. And just look, I'm just seeing it. It's cool. And then the explanation is that every molecule of water is this sort of lopsided shape that kind of looks like,
you know,
like a stylized Mickey Mouse head. And because it's not symmetrical, there's like the mouse ears on one side and the head on the other side, they tend to line up with each other. And the soap disturbs the connection between the molecules and makes all the molecules on one side kind of pull harder than the ones on the side with the soap. And so you're actually, this little thing where you're watching the pepper move, you're seeing atoms and molecules, and you're seeing them move, and you're seeing...
it's freaky, man.
Know, these forces, and you're like, oh my God, like atoms are not just this thing that people talk about, the story that we tell. They're real and they're moving, and I'm doing it by just with this little piece of soap. And mm-hmm. I just had that sudden moment of that point when your brain flips from, oh, these are sort of like cool facts that I'm learning about the world, to, oh my God, this is real. This is the world is actually made out of atoms, and it blew my mind.
The other one that blew your mind that has since co-blown mine was you're talking about a magnet and a paperclip.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. This was the other thing. This is probably, you know, this is maybe in college when people are talking about the different forces of nature and the gravity, even though we think of it as the overwhelming force that controls our lives, gravity is the weakest of the natural forces. And first I think, how can that be true? And then my professor said, okay, you know,
because it's everywhere. Earth is huge. Right, bowling balls fall on your head. It's
right,
bad.
Right. So
gravity.
He said, okay, take a toy magnet and here's a paper clip and, you know, put it, you touch the magnet, the paper clip, and of course the magnet lifts up the paper clip. He says, now think about it. The entire Earth is pulling down on this paper clip.
This whole Earth,
one
whole
teeny
planet.
Tiny toy magnet is pulling up on the paper clip. And that teeny tiny magnet is stronger than the entire Earth.
It wins.
Like, oh, gravity is
weak.
Dude. Gravity's hardly doing anything.
That's a great way to think about it.
I should be able to fly.
I should be able to
Let
fly.
Let me just concentrate.
Yes. I did a lot of that also. It never worked, but I'm still trying.
You know, hot air balloons wouldn't go up without gravity pulling the air down. That also freaks me out. That's freaky.
Huh. Yeah.
Gravity cold air squeezes warm air up. People say warm air rises because cold air is squeezing it up. And people say heat rises. Sort of. Gotta have gravity. Gotta have gravity. A story that freaks me out. Much, you know, I'm of a certain age, people. I was a kid when the space program was invented and they were gonna try to beat the Russians to the moon. And this guy, Fred Hayes, who was an astronaut on Apollo 13.
Oh, Fred Hayes. That was the guy who Bill Paxton played in the movie.
Apollo 13, notorious, amazing story. Guys go to the moon. Whoa, something shorted up. Whoa, electrical problem. Got to come home. Whoa, it's cold. The spacecraft has no heaters. We're trying to turn off all the electrical using appliances. No microwave, no toaster, no hairdryer. So Fred Hayes reported that he could keep warm on Apollo 13 coming back to Earth. He could keep warm if he held really still.
Huh.
So what would happen when you hold really still in zero gravity or virtually zero gravity, a layer of warm air would form around him and it wouldn't get squeezed off. It wouldn't rise away. It would just stay there like a blanket. Just without, I mean, how cool is that?
Now, was that
just to me is amazing.
Was that warm air? Was that his own body heat?
His own body.
His own body heat just forms this kind of cocoon and it doesn't go anywhere.
As long as you don't wave your arms or sneeze. Mm-hmm. Or whatever.
Right. So they've also done experiments where like if you light a candle or if you burn a flame in zero G or in microgravity, it just forms a little ball that burns just a little bit on the outside because the flame doesn't have anywhere to go and the heat doesn't go anywhere. It just forms this little blue ball.
Bill, I know you wanted to be an astronaut at one point in your life.
Sure.
Do you still have the ambition to go to space?
Well, if I got a ride, yeah, I'd do it in a moment. No, seriously, you guys, I applied 4 times, you know, and I said, this is one of my favorite hilarious comedy jokes is modern people who become astronauts are like, dude. So, you know, you're sitting there, the guy's got a clipboard. Deanna, how many PhDs do you have?
I have none. I have none, but I have a master's degree.
A, 100 to 300. B, 300 to, it's like, what? Gillian, how many marathons have you run this month? Like, who are these people that become astronauts? They're just extraordinary, overachieving maniacs. More power to them. And that's good. But if I could get a ride, man, I'd go in a moment. As long as I can come back.
Okay, so we actually want to talk about some heroines in your family in STEAM. Bill, we know your mom, she was a code breaker during World War II. Can you tell us about that?
Well, all I can tell you is that she apparently was a code breaker. She's what people call the code girl. She was one of the code girls. She was recruited by the Navy. So this is something that I had nothing to do with, you guys. My mother was graduated from college in the spring of 1942. So World War II for the U.S. had started a month earlier or a few months earlier in Pearl Harbor, a day that will live in infamy, 7 December. So my mother was recruited because she was a good student. My grandfather, whom I never met, was an organic chemist. So I guess she was brought up with a tradition of science or something. And I will say objectively, my mother was very good at puzzles, crossword puzzles and
Rebus?
Anagrams. She was good at anagrams.
You mean like
Rebuses, yeah. She was good at all those sorts of puzzles. And I remember she and my dad, at this point in our story, I was alive, which I wasn't in 1942. I remember them sitting around composing limericks. That was like a thing they did. And people would ask her, people of that age, when the war was over, they would ask each other, what did you do during the war? That was how they started conversations. The way nowadays we'll say, you know, what do you do? Well, I'm an actress on this amazing, very popular NCIS show, for example. What do you do? Well, what did you do during the war, Jackie? And she would say, I can't talk about it. She would laugh. She worked on what's called neutral shipping, where there were supposed to be rules of war and the German submarines weren't supposed to sink neutral ships. And the Allies were not supposed to put war supplies on neutral ships, but it's war. And I got a feeling a lot went down that was that was not per the rules of killing each other and ending lives of people you've never met on a large scale. So
was she part of the Waves program?
She was a Wave.
Yeah, so that Grace Hopper was a Wave as well. She
yeah, yeah. So my mom was a little younger than Grace Hopper.
Yes,
by 10 years or so.
I know Grace Hopper was already a professor of mathematics at Vassar when the war started. So, yeah.
So anyway, this is something I had nothing to do with, but I was raised with the tradition of math and science. That's for sure.
It's interesting you say that because you also mentioned that your mother was sort of raised with the tradition of math and science from your grandfather. Yeah. And it's nice to see how families can really encourage learning in STEAM and STEM.
So I have her 7th grade chemistry test.
Wow.
She got 100. She got a perfect score. And you guys, it's from a different era. Her handwriting
is
so
beautiful back then.
Nice.
Yes.
It's like, wow. And then the other thing, not unrelated, her father, my grandfather, could blow glass.
What?
He was a chemist. Yeah. He was a chemist, and he would make his own shapes to solve whatever, to make the mixture do whatever mixing it was going to do. And it was something that guys of that age just had the opportunity to learn. And so my mother gave me some of his glassware to play with, these strange glass shapes that really weren't that fragile. Like he blew them thick enough to not break very much. And so that had I just thought it was just cool. And then I think about my niece and nephew who met in chemical engineering grad school, the way you do. They can do this software called ChemDraw, which is, you know, must be derived of Grace Hopper's work, you know, 60, 70 years later. They design molecules literally, you guys, over breakfast. They're sitting there with their laptops eating a scone, but they can't blow glass. You know, and then I listened to the intro to your show, Deanna and Gillian, and you have this reference to graphing calculators. I'm so old.
How old are you?
You never had a graphing calculator. I didn't. Well, that was a new thing. When I was working at Boeing, you could get a computer that would do a graph for you.
Did you have to sort of manually pull the lever to add numbers?
No, we had electricity. But when I was in school, you guys, I had slide rules.
You did?
I have some beautiful slide rules there. They're great looking, beautiful things that can multiply and divide. Take logarithms, sines, cosines, tangents, just to 3 digits. You can get 3.23, but you can't go any farther. And it doesn't tell you whether it's 3.23 or 32.3 or 3,230,000. You got to figure that out yourself. And yes, mistakes were made.
All right, Corey, we know that your wife is a physician and you helped her set up an outside office so she can see COVID positive patients. Can you tell us more about your wife and your family connections to STEM?
Sure. So I got to be, a science enabler, a domestic support system. My wife started out working in a very kind of like a corporate medical setting. She was at a clinic affiliated with Beth Israel here in New York City, where I am. And got very frustrated with the way corporate medicine worked and with just the assembly line approach to medicine. And she said, you know, this terrifies me, but I really, really want to get out of it and just create my own practice. And so she created really what's like an old style family doctor practice. She has an office in the neighborhood. She is a solo practitioner. I mean, she is the only person. There's no receptionist. There's no nurse. There's one person in the office and she's it.
Oh, wow.
And so she sees patients in the neighborhood. She's an old-fashioned family doctor, which was great until COVID hit, when all of a sudden you know, not only was there no national plan or, you know, even really at first a coherent state level plan, but especially there was no plan for just like individual practitioners like that. What, you know, what limited planning there was mostly aimed at, you know, at large hospitals. And so she kind of made it up as she went along. And then, you know, and I helped her turn her outside courtyard into, you know, into a place where she could see COVID positive patients. And we went through, we cleaned up the backyard, we set up a tent, we figured out a sanitation scheme. It really was like we were kind of inventing medicine while we were waiting for first for testing. And now now she's waiting for vaccines to show up. You know, it was a very, very kind of hands-on look at the pandemic, and also just at how medicine works in this country right now. On the one hand, you know, I'm honored that I get to support this. It's also kind of appalling at sort of how much she's out there on her own, and you know, sort of, you know, it's just kind of how little institutional support there is.
Are there ways that you guys are sort of incorporating your kids into your scientific learning and your scientific everyday lives?
Well, I think so. For me, the family history that I've gone through is a fair bit different than Bill's in the sense my grandparents were all immigrants and they came here and they had almost like, you know, traditional immigrant jobs. I mean, my mother's mother ran a little general store. My father's father was a butcher. Then my parents were the first generation who went to college, went to university. And so the science background that I got really was from like this immigrant philosophy of like every generation should be lifted up above what the generation was before. But sort of science and technology didn't really happen until my generation in my family. And yeah, I think, you know, I feel a certain both pride and responsibility in how I'm raising my kids that, you know, there's sort of three generations of lifting up that brought me here. And yeah, I damn well better keep that going. And especially when you look around right now and see how much the world needs it. I feel that, but I also feel, you know, a lot of pride that, you know, my mother, who did not have any particular scientific background, really encouraged my curiosity. And she was a stay-at-home mom, and she had this line that she would say, she's like, I'm not a housewife because I didn't marry a house. You know, and you know, she was very, very proud that what she was she was an educator, and she was there to raise her kids.
Corey, I never heard that. My mom was trying to save the world working as a code breaker, a cryptographer, cryptologist. But she then raised three kids, and then she went back in the workforce. And I remember her resume said, manage $25,000 plant, which was the mortgage on the house I grew up in Washington. Managed, she was, I never heard the story about your mom didn't marry a house. That's pretty great. My mom would not be a housewife either.
You know exactly how much you're worth because she had the dollar number. So you can actually give yourself a value.
She got ripped off.
Yeah.
Creativity there, that's actually wonderful.
Science Rules will be right back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You're listening to Science Rules.
Bill, do you hear that sizzling sound?
I wondered what that sound was. Is that the sound of grilling?
It is the sound of grilling, and that means it's time for our new segment, Grill Bill and Query Corey. Grill Bill, it's got nothing to do with Quentin Tarantino. this segment, we'll have famous people like Gillian and Deanna here bring us their pressing science-related questions, and we'll do our best to answer them. Bill?
Bring it on. Wow, I feel the pressure. I feel the heat.
I feel the sizzle.
Bill, name all the moons of Jupiter.
Well, that's hard. There's 80, I think, now.
Well, that's why this is Grill Bill.
Yeah, the four big ones were discovered by Galileo using a telescope that I guess was used by military people, and nobody ever thought to look at the sky with it until Galileo. But anyway, Callisto, Ganymede, Io, and Europa.
That's all you got?
Well, those are the four big ones that you can see with a pair of binoculars if you just steady your arm there, lean against a door or something.
Okay.
Then there's 78 more, man. I can't do them all. Emily Lakdawalla from the Planetary Society could tell you all of them.
Even Emily couldn't do it.
Corey.
Yep.
Does fire have a shadow?
It does. I've seen it. The cool thing about fire is because it creates such a hot mass of air, and air has a refractive index, that if you shine a light through a fire, you actually will see the shimmering outline of a flame. So yes, fire has a shadow.
It's like a lens.
Yes, oh. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just need something brighter than the fire to cast the shadow of the fire.
Ah, okay. Okay. Now I know. Cool.
Bill, were there any dinosaurs that would have made good household pets?
Boy, I don't think so. In the same way, chickens don't make especially good household pets, but there must have been. And by the way, we do have dinosaurs as household pets. We have canaries.
Oh.
And lovebirds and all those guys. And everybody is pretty satisfied right now that birds are part of the clad or the biological grouping called Dinosaura, right? There are birds or dinosaurs. So next time if you're not a vegetarian and you're enjoying a chicken, you're eating a dinosaur.
Okay. Corey, I know that follicles generally determine hair shape. Like a more circular follicle that goes straight into the scalp, it generally means straighter hair. So why is my hair still curly so far away from the follicle?
If you look at the hair up close, it's not a straight strand like spaghetti. There's typically, you know, a curve or a changing thickness or kind of a twist in the hair itself and the way it's extruded. And so basically, you know, your follicle isn't spitting out spaghetti, it's spitting out fusilli. And so it just kind of keeps that curvature keeps going. I'm sort of spitballing here, but I have looked at a lot of hairs for mainly because I have to clean the house, but I've looked at a lot of hairs, and you definitely can see the different textures of different types of hairs, both from different parts of your body and from different people. Some of them have the twist in them, some of them are very straight, some of them are thin and thick. There's a whole architecture of how the hair works as it's coming out of the follicle.
Dumb follow-up question. Why does the weight of it not help straighten it out more?
It's because, if you'll recall, gravity is very weak. So the chemical bonding in your hair, just like the mechanical twist in the hair, is so much stronger than the weight of the gravity pulling on it that it's the physical properties of the hair completely dominate.
So, not changing the subject, if you have a ballpoint pen and you unscrew it and there's a little spring in there, the gravity's not enough to make the spring straighten out.
True.
So, and you mean your hair, one's hair is not a wire, but it's got to be related.
Bill, can we hear your Steve Martin impression?
Gee whiz. You know, he got to meet me one time.
I've never heard this, so I'm very excited about this question.
As you may know, I'm just a huge admirer of him, and it's very reasonable that none of us would be sitting here talking without the Steve Martin lookalike contest in Seattle, which I won. You know, I wouldn't believe in anything if it wasn't for my lucky astrology mood watch. God, it's just a brilliant sentence. So he'll be going in his act at the height of his stand-up comedy powers. He would just remember when the world blew up? We all came to this planet on the giant space ark. Remember, the government decided not to tell all the stupid people because they were afraid that, how are we doing on time?
Do you think that there are going to be any big innovations in aeronautics in the next decade?
No, we're done.
Okay.
That's it. No, I'm kidding. So a couple things are going to happen. It's very reasonable that all this research with these enormous computers, thank you, Grace Hopper, that are going to allow an organization to build a plane where it has a very, very small sonic boom, where the nose or the bow of the plane and the tail of the plane are going to make sonic booms. They always do, but they'll somehow figure out a way to make them destructively interfere with each other. Then the other thing I think is going to happen is SpaceX just going pedal to the metal or rocket fuel to the nozzle. They're going to make a rocket ship that can come and go from Earth surface to Earth surface, the mythic thing from London to Sydney.
Yeah, point-to-point rocketry.
Yeah, it's 10 years is pretty short, but 20 years, it will be, you'll be able to see it from here. Yeah.
All right. But this
thing, and the other thing, of course, we all dream of is renewable jet fuel.
All right. Thank you so much for indulging all of my questions.
Oh, you guys, you're so nice.
Thank you for indulging all of our answers.
Yeah, God, on and on and on. Thank you, Gillian and Deanna, for joining us today to talk about your work. Very excited about your new podcast. Our guests today have been Gillian Jacobs and Deanna Riesenhofer. Fine actors both they are. Their new podcast is called If Then. That's if/then, which is like that's cause and effect. That's science. And you can find it wherever you listen to Science Rules. Remember, when it comes to understanding just about everything,
Science Rules.
And if you like Science Rules, please take a moment to rate and review it in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It helps us out, helps other people learn about the show. It helps us figure out what you want to listen to. So thank you. Be sure to look at all my socials for more information on our upcoming guests. I'm at Bill Nye on all those things. Meanwhile, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, give us a call at 201-472-0785 or submit your question to askbillnye.com. Science Rules is produced by Harry Huggins and this very same Corey S. Powell. We had help this week from Tomika Weatherspoon. Casey Halford mixed this episode and composed our original theme. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer. And at Stitcher, everybody,
Science Rules.
Deanna, Gillian, thank you so much. Be safe out there.
Stitcher.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.